This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago, where there have been ground stops at O'Hare and Midway airports. The reason? Storm sirens in the Chicago area as the National Weather Service warned of tornado-producing storms for the city and some of its surrounding suburbs. In Phoenix, Arizona, CBS's Omar Villafranca says heat is the problem. They've hit at least 110 degrees for 12 straight days.
As searing heat continues to cook the Phoenix area, the Salvation Army Respite Center offers a break from the baking temperatures. The cooling center is one of more than 200 in the Phoenix area where people can rest in the AC, take a cool shower, or grab a cold water. David Hondula is the city of Phoenix's so-called heat czar.
How quick can you go and get heat exhaustion?
It can happen very quickly. Even just a half hour in this heat can really change how our body's feeling, how we're performing.
As Vermont residents try to pick up the pieces after raging floodwaters, more rain is in the forecast. Governor Phil Scott says it could be a while before the damage in the state is fully assessed.
The flooding we've seen is historic. And as waters begin to recede, we'll be surveying the damage done to infrastructure, homes, and businesses.
The NATO leaders' summit in Lithuania ends without Ukraine getting immediate membership. President Biden says he and President Zelensky discussed Ukraine's counteroffensive against Russia.
They're still optimistic, but they know it's a hard slog.
Striking entertainment writers walked the picket line today in front of Amazon Studios in Culver City, California. It took place in the middle of Amazon's Prime Day shopping event. A writer weighed in on the possibility of SAG-AFTRA actors joining the strike.
I think you have two major unions on strike at the same time, and Hollywood will come to even more of a halt than it has already, and I think that can only help and not harm.
The SAG-AFTRA contract deadline is midnight Pacific time. A report from the UN Sexual and Reproductive Health Agency blames racism for the disparity in maternal mortality for women of African descent in North and South America. CBS's Allison Keyes reports.
The report finds that black and mixed-race women of African descent face disadvantages based on racist assumptions in medical education, health service delivery, and policymaking. Many doctors are incorrectly taught that black people feel less pain and are less likely to bleed after birth because their blood clots more quickly. At Mass General Brigham, Dr. Allison Bryant.
We need to see change on the individual one-to-one level.
The report disproves misconceptions that black women's lifestyle choices or genetics are the problem. Allison Keyes, CBS News.
Stocks close up on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Adopt U.S.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in northwestern Wisconsin. A 21-year-old man is dead and another person is hurt in Taylor County after a crash last night. The sheriff's office said the man was racing another vehicle when he lost control going around a curve. A passenger in the man's vehicle was hurt in the crash. Several people were also arrested at the crash scene, and the sheriff's office said in a release that alcohol was a factor in the crash. Two people were arrested after bullet holes were found in a couple of vehicles in Menominee last night. The Menominee Police Department said they were called when people heard gunshots downtown. Shell casings were found near the area the calls came from. Police said there is no danger to the public. And today is the start of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls. The event is in its 125th year. Over 100,000 people attended the event last year. The event, at a cost of $6 million, constructed new buildings for animal exhibits. The previous buildings didn't have enough space or modern amenities for those exhibits. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
It's not just about the barrels in construction. Highway projects are community investments. So do your part. Stay alert, eliminate distractions, and mind your speed. Every driver makes a difference. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
It feels like they're trying to pit the teachers against the parents, and all of us can come together to say, look, stop trying to, you know, divide and conquer and work with us. And they're still trying to hide and say, well, the JFC cut it. There's nothing I can do. Yes, there is. You can vote for the amendment to continue child care counts.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Shoes.
It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5. The Tap. 93.5. The Tap.
Consider economic issues like lost profits for the oil and gas industry when deciding whether a species deserves protections.
Good. We will take what we can get. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to spend the day talking about our day in Erie, Pennsylvania over the weekend as we walked the picket line and went to the union hall of the UE workers who are on strike at Wabtec. And look, this is one of those stories of a union looking at the company and going, we can help you. We can help you do better. We can help you create better jobs for the community. We can help you create better jobs for our workers. This could be the place that is the heart of the American dream. We can help. And we're going to. This is the great part. This is an important story because these workers, yeah, they're asking for a little bit more money in their paychecks because this is a wildly profitable company and they should be sharing it because the workers earn it. But this is also about going, look, the future of work in this country, you know, we're moving towards a cleaner, greener economy. The work should be done in the U.S. They say we want it done in this plant, which is one of the most profitable in their system, one of the top performers in their system. They're going, look, you should be making it here. And it's not just the workers pushing for this, it's the community. Because what the community understands is when those workers do better, when they've got a little bit of disposable money in their pocket, that money goes through the local economy. And the thing is when we took our trip, and I talked about this on our radio program that, yesterday, that money that goes into those workers' pocket, that disposable income, ends up in the local economy. It ends up reverberating on Main Street. Whereas Wabtec wants to take that money out of Main Street, give it to Wall Street, wants to put it in their pockets, in the pockets of the investors. The workers are going, hey, we're the ones who create this. We're the ones who do the hard work in the heat of the summer, in the cold of the winter. We're the ones who, during the pandemic, showed up and busted our behinds to make you wild profits. It's now time to pony up. Not just for us, but for the community, and the community gets it. So for me, this is the model going forward of communities that used to be. Because look, as we were driving around Erie and we ended up going to Niagara Falls, man, that area just decimated with closed down factories and you know, Main Street that's looking a little ragged and rough. But it's no different than the places we went to on our Working Class Heroes tour.
the hollowing out of America started with manufacturing leaving. And what we've learned over this, you know, 40, 50 year experiment of neoliberalism and supply side voodoo Reaganomics is you got to be able to take raw materials and turn it into value added products as the center of your economy, as what brings money in. So for me today on the program, again, we're going to be spending a lot of time focused on these workers, going to tell the stories of the people who were there, and hopefully get people activated in their local communities to go, you know what, we can do better. We want to do better. We got to do better. We need public policy to help. But more importantly, we need to adopt a striker. Wherever there's a strike, you should be walking the picket line with them. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in Erie at UE Hall, Local 506, as we're covering the strike that's going on. And look, you know, when we go to these things, I like getting a wide array of people who have decided that they're going to spend a little time walking the picket line. Because as I've said before, everyone should be adopting a striker. I've been saying this for years. Go out there, walk next to them on the picket line, listen to what they've got to say, hear why they're out there. Don't listen to the nonsense that you hear in the media or somebody told you. Get out there and walk the line with them. Buy a box of donuts, a pizza, a bottle of water. Come by and walk with a striker. And I've got one of them here with me. Brian Pietrek is a Wabtec heavy equipment operator. He's also involved in the local. He's the treasurer and the independent legislative action committee chair. Brian, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me. Welcome to Erie.
Why are we here?
Well, we're up with a contentious debate and contract with this company who really feels that that our members are like numbers on a spreadsheet. That's how we all feel. 4 years of hell was also 4 years of contract interpretation from 2019. And we knew where we were going in, the direction we were going in after the contract was ratified, that it was going to be a rough 4 years. And it was rougher than anybody can imagine. When GE went out, we wanted a change because we were sick of GE's politics and how they were treating the union. But this company is 10 times worse than GE. They are just all about the money. It's not a two-way street program whatsoever. It's Wall Street focused. The shareholders come first, and I think that's their policy. We are treated like numbers. Even they turn the heat off on us in the winter. For COVID, there was no thank yous. Get back to work while we sit at home, play on our computers, and we watch what you do from there. On top of taking away our vacation as of late, having us they're going to schedule our vacations for us. They took a six-week vacation away for people with 30 years of service or more. The benefits now that they're proposing with this contract, which is one of the main reasons why we're out on the picket lines today, is that they have every right to diminish our health care benefits and without any capping of the prices. And our demographics in the shop with legacy workers, meaning they make full rate, is the average age is 58 years old. It's very important. With the new hires, it drops down to 53, so there is a younger demographic coming in. However, benefits are very important across the board for everybody, and especially if the price goes up, and you know damn well it will, it rattled some nerves. And I think the people that were on the fence that were undecided on how to vote came to the auditorium right down the road here during the vote to listen to what our leadership had to say about the sandwich we're about to eat. And how much jelly is it enough for you to swallow? And a lot of people said, that's not enough jelly. And that's exactly why we did the right thing by hitting the bricks. We're telling the company it's not good enough. Now, you also look at MarketWatch.com. As of, I think last Saturday I saw it. Last Saturday I saw Wabtec has a metric up there called revenue per employee. So that's how much money they make off that employee each year. And it's up to $320,000. That's no joke. $320,000 they make off the backs of everybody, not just the laborers, but the business folks as well that work for that company. We're fighting for a progression tier. This is number two on top of the benefits. We want that 10-year progression decreased. They don't want to budge on that. You're making $320,000 a year on that individual, and you can't give them a nickel raise.
No. No, that's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Even just to narrow it down, because everybody, that, including myself, was on a progression tier at one point or another. Mine was only a year and a half. It was 18 months. Some of the guys that started in the 80s were 5 years. Okay, we get the progression tier. We understand that you want to make full rate. Okay, there's a break-in period before you start actually making, you know, good
quality. Yeah, but 10 years?
10 years, though? Get out of here. And, you know, originally our proposal was zero. That was our starting point because we felt that there should be no second tier. It's not a permanent two-tier wage, though. It's a progression tier. So they can have the right to go to legacy. But the problem with this company is you're going to get laid off. I've been laid off for 2.5 years. So if you have 3 years in, you're going to come back in 3 years at that rate that you left out on. And then what if you get laid off again? Like I said, it would take you 20 years maybe to get to that legacy weight.
Wow.
Think about that. And
see, it was always progression always started your anniversary date. Calendars, not working years.
Right. Yeah, they're not respecting that.
Wow.
Now think about this too. Now say if you're 20-something years old and you're finally, you know, up in your 40s, you're making legacy wages, you don't have that farther to go to retirement. You know, and especially with what they were going to give us for wage increases as legacy workers, none of us are complaining about that. But the media seems to be picking up on why you guys, you know, yelling about the wage increases. You guys are getting 8.5% plus two lump sums over 4 years. We're not. We're complaining about the progression. You're not giving any sort of leeway here to get these guys up to par with legacy workers. That's not fair. We're not going to work with somebody who's going to be making $10 to $15 an hour less than us. I'm sorry. What if that was your kid? That's the thing. They do not have any empathy. It's all about dollars and cents. Now, to talk about that, I'm going to go off of a tangent here. This is a very nepotistic management that we have. It's almost, I like to, a lot of people call it incestuous because there is four particular family trees that do control this plant that came from GE. So it's the same boss, or the new boss, the same as the old boss.
Yeah.
And now their kids are there. Now you have third or fourth, even fifth generation spawn running the show over there. Now, we also all have that statistic where Scott calls it the third generation syndrome when the grandkid starts running the business and ends up tanking. Well, this is why, because they're never told to get their hands dirty, number one. They probably don't even know how to turn a bolt the right way to tighten it. Number two, number three.
But they're in charge.
And it's from these institutions that the corporations also own, that they pay a lot of money into, that teach them the do's and don'ts of how to run a business. Now, unfortunately, it's almost nihilistic. That's how we feel, especially after COVID. When Delta hit, I was terrified because my girlfriend at the time was going through a cancer battle. And I was trying to be safe as can be. We were all, for the most part, in our work area, we all got along. We all understood, no matter what the political divide was, we respect each other, whether you wanted to wear the mask or not. But the company wasn't reinforcing anything. When Delta came in and you saw all your coworkers getting sick, especially in the smaller rooms where they're building sensitive equipment and panels, everybody on each shift got it. There are people upstairs, two guys in particular, that got it on the same day, and they died pretty close to the same days. I mean, we knew these people. Company didn't care. Guess what? We're going to bring in somebody else.
Yeah.
Next. That's exactly it. Now, imagine how horrific that is. Like, I have PTSD a little bit from that, especially being at the time I was a union steward and having to deal with the management also being inconsistent on running the show that they were having with this COVID because they didn't want to get into it because they didn't know anything about it. They can give two hoots about it. And then what do? They shut the heat off. great. So we can't stay warm. We're actually going to be more subject to get sick now. Wonderful. Thank you. Just to save $60,000. But they're making $320,000 off of me that year.
Well, they did have to, you know, buy back, what, was that a half, more than a half a billion dollars?
Well, the original statistic I got was $750 million, and I think Bernie said 530. I think that was the number on his latest tweet. I think that was over the last weekend. But still, you're giving it to Wall Street and nobody on the floor?
And this is one of those things that is one of my pet peeves, the idea that, you know, we're going to buy back our stocks. This tells me that you don't think there's any productive use for that money. You can't invest in new equipment. You can't invest in new facilities. You can't invest in research and development. And you sure as aren't willing to invest in your workers. You're just going to stick it in your pocket. And it is all about the greed. That's, yep, to me, that's the message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not even, I don't even call it corporate greed. It's boardroom greed. The corporation's not doing it. It's the people who's running the board that are doing these, making these calls. And it's unfortunate because the package that we were looking at total originally, that was our starting point. Our original package was estimated to be $150 million with 1,400 people over 4 years. That's how it would have benefited. And, you know, they said, that's way too much. That's way too much. Now they're saying it was $39 million, that this is the final best offer. However, if you look at their top CEOs, the top 11 of them made $160 million in 4 years' time. You can't have it all. And I think that's the point. I think back in 2019, we made the big FU to Wabtec on their first day because they wanted $17 an hour out of everybody. 3 weeks maximum vacation. No, we are a tier one manufacturing society. Sorry. We are a tier one manufacturing facility that makes super heavy things, and people can get hurt real quick. Those locomotives that I work with out in the yard that I tow with a Bobcat, they are 498,000 pounds. A lot can go wrong in a small amount of time if you're in the wrong place and time.
I don't want to drop that on my foot.
And this is another thing that's an issue. It's the training. We have new management here because the old squad's kind of going up the corporate ladder, so they're getting this new influx of people who've never really worked a day in manufacturing in their lives. And you can tell. Because they think that these new hires, because they're having a hard time bringing in folks who are skilled in welding, electronics, electricians, testers, even assemblers, because they're making better money in their shops to begin with. We're getting folks that don't have much manufacturing experience, little to none, and they're coming in here, and the management's telling them, you're trained after 2 weeks. A monkey can do this. I've heard my own boss say that, and I was ready to freaking knock him out, but that's another story.
Yeah, but however, maybe a monkey can, but you can't.
You can't, man. But these people are getting hurt. They're getting hurt real bad. We had a guy who had a stator lid fall on him because the boss figured he was trained, told him to do it. He didn't disobey. He pulled it out of an oven, 400 degrees, and this 400-pound part landed on his femur and crushed it. Think about that. And on top of the weight, it was burning.
Oh.
Now, we also had a kid who was 2 weeks on the job. He was using rotating equipment, wearing gloves, and he was using a torque wrench. And it grabbed and spun a hold of his thumb and ripped it right off. When they picked up the glove, they had the thumb inside, but the string was hanging out. They thought it was a sleeve, it was a tendon from his muscle all the way up to his elbow. This is a new kid, 20 years old. His last job was working at a convenience store. He had no business having those gloves on, but the manager saw it and said, it's okay, it's fine, do it. Now, the third thing, so those are the big two. The benefits of why we hit the bricks, the progression tier, and three is accountability. The right to strike over our grievances is number one in my book because they have no accountability whatsoever, and they weren't afraid to show it these past few weeks before we actually voted to go out. Meaning, they brought in scabs to work side by side with us because they said we were refusing to work the overtime. And the contractor says they can do that. However, they weren't asking everybody to work the overtime. They were just bringing these people in. Then they expect us to train them. No. But we file a board charge and stuff, but they don't care. They want to send everything to arbitration like usual. I think their ultimate goal is to bankrupt this union. And being as the financial secretary / treasurer, I'm frightened about that.
Yeah, arbitrations are not cheap.
Yeah, and I think we're averaging, from what I've tabulated, it's about 9,000 each case. We have 68 in the queue. When it was GE, at the most in any given year was at least three, or at the most three, I'm sorry. At the most was three arbitrations in the queue. We have 68. So it shows you that they don't care anything about that contract. And when we went to the originally proposed in negotiations that we want that right to strike, that lawyer for Jones Day, the union's or the
union
nation's
busting.
Largest union-busting law firm, said, read my lips, it ain't happening. But then President Scott here said, oh, it is happening, read my lips. So also we felt, too, during negotiations that the bargaining and good faith kind of went out the window when we wanted to press them again on this issue. And instead they said, well, if you want that, we want this. And they slid a letter over across the table saying, we want 275 of your indirect labor subcontracted out to a third party. Indirect labor meaning all your jitney drivers, your inventory, your inspectors, anything that is non-productive that doesn't make them money. They were basically saying, we want these people out. We're going to bring our own crew in at a way lesser price, with way lesser overhead. And how are you negotiating in good faith with a gun to your head?
Yeah.
That's exactly how I felt. When I was in that meeting, my jaw was down to my gut was down to my knees. How the hell are they supposed, how are you supposed to react to something like that on the fly?
No, they put that out there wanting you to strike.
Yeah.
So they've pushed you into the middle of this.
It feels like we got forced. But and that's why we're kind of going after the unemployment, because before you know it, all these scabs are showing up when we go back to work because we decided to let the membership vote on it. And we're like, what the heck? They didn't even send these guys home. And then we come to find out they were planning on us going on strike. They were shocked that they sent it to a membership vote, but they were we were stuck with all these scabs. That's why they brought them in there. We come to find that out later. It's like, you guys are terrible. Their PR, it's like you're hitting a hornet's nest with a bat. Membership is upset. And then it took the vacation away because they forgot to schedule our own shutdown, which is in our contract. Like I said, no accountability, right? Hey, you are a guy. You forgot to schedule the shutdown, prior to April 1st. You gave it to us on April 1st. Well, what the company did was they let him go, but they said, well, we're going to schedule your vacations for you. That was a big oh, hell no from the membership. Even from the guys with next to nothing in service to the guys with 40-plus years there, and there are some in there. Like, how dare you? So I don't understand what they were trying to do, especially in that time between where we went to the e-board decided to send it to the membership vote to when the membership actually voted on it. But I don't exactly know what their plan was because they were scared. They felt uncomfortable for the first time because we were working without a contract. And the best thing to say is good. How does it feel to work uncomfortably? We've been dealing with it for four freaking years.
Yeah.
We are sick of it. And I firmly believe, I mean, everybody has a right vote because everybody's situation is different. The circumstances are different for everybody. Nobody's vote is wrong. And I told that to the membership, too, because when I was explaining the last chance offer, I told them, you vote however you feel that you want to vote. There's no right answer. But how we come out of this, whatever that decision you guys decide to vote on, we have to stick together. Because that rage is going to turn into solidarity, and you can ask any one of these union busters that have been hired for the dark side. That's the only way you win contracts, is when that rage turns into solidarity, you go back to work. And that's what we're going to try to keep focus on. I think if this is a marathon of a lockout or however they're going to dub it, I feel it's a lockout just because of the way the negotiations went. I was right there. I mean, it was just awful. I mean, but if it's a marathon or a sprint, I think in the marathon it's key right now that our leadership keeps everybody together, keeps everybody happy as much as we can. And that's why I'm here for. That's why I've been busting my brains and what in kahunas off here for the past week because I want to make sure everything's, yeah. Everybody's okay. It's all strictly volunteer, but I love doing this. I love helping people, and I feel like this is the place I need to be,
Well,
and
good
on
you.
And I feel like anytime I'm out, even at home, I was like, man, I should be going back there, and everybody's telling me here, no, take a break. I know you want to try to do so much, but there's only so much time in a day. And I know you got to get going here too, but I can talk volumes about this place.
No, this is...
It's sad, though. It really is.
But, you know, again, it shows why we are where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that there are good reasons to be where you are.
Yep.
Really didn't have a choice in this.
At all. I mean, nobody wants a strike.
Nope.
Put that... I want to make that very clear. Nobody wants a strike. But if you really feel that passionate about what kind of sandwich they're going to serve you, guess what? You do something about it, because if you don't do it now, you're going to not do it later. You're going to keep kicking that can down the road.
Yeah, and you're going to end up getting the short end of the stick.
Exactly.
But Brian, I appreciate the time. I wish you the best, and as this continues, I'd love to have you back to share some more, and especially on Victory Day.
You too, brother. I hope you're here for it.
Thanks so much, Brian.
All right, you too.
Appreciate it, brother.
All right.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break back here from Erie, Pennsylvania. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1930. That was the day some 1,300 labor radicals and Communist Party supporters assembled in Chicago to establish the National Unemployed Council. That spring, councils in major cities across the country held massive rallies for jobs and relief. They were responding to near catastrophic conditions created by the stock market crash. Delegates emerged from the founding convention with an organizational structure and demands for action. These included unemployment insurance, cash and work relief, public works at union wages, free food for children of unemployed, and a moratorium on evictions. Delegates acknowledged that African Americans bore the worst of the unfolding depression. They worked to address racial discrimination as part of an integrated push for jobs and relief. Councils were established throughout 46 states. They were best known for massive demonstrations, hunger marches, and rent strikes. Councils mobilized hundreds, sometimes thousands, quickly to march on city halls or relief offices when benefits were threatened. They were also able to mobilize scores of supporters at a moment's notice to stop evictions. Councils often mobilized the unemployed to bolster picket lines during strikes. This undercut the recruitment of scabs. By 1935, the National Unemployed Council merged with other socialist unemployed groups led by the Socialist Party and A.J. Mustie to form the Workers' Alliance. According to sociologist Chad Allen Goldberg, the Workers' Alliance worked to secure, quote, more WPA jobs, higher wages for WPA workers, and application of new federal labor laws to the WPA. Goldberg attributes their demise by 1941 to a combination of factors, including the rise of a powerful anti-labor coalition of Republicans and Southern Democrats, red baiting, and internal political conflicts.
Two pieces of good advice. Never sign nothing by neon, and never negotiate with snakes. But Joe Biden violated both rules this year, getting out negotiated by Senate Republicans and their tag-along Democrat Joe Manchin. As a result, Biden completely surrendered an urgently needed program for America, universal child care. The U.S. child care system is broken at every level. Availability is scarce, and even if parents can find an opening, the price is forbidding. Yet, care providers and teachers are grossly underpaid. So we're doomed by corporate greed and Washington's indifference, right? Wrong. Grassroots people across the country are demanding and getting real change at the state level. Last year, for example, voters in New Mexico rallied a decade-long care rebellion to put a landmark initiative on the ballot to guarantee that all children ages 0 to 5 have a constitutional right to quality early childhood education. Moreover, Amendment 1 allocates a steady stream of money from New Mexico's land-grant permanent fund to make this promise real. The vote initiative passed with 70% of the vote. Vermont, led by such persistent grassroots groups as Let's Grow Kids, is providing $130 million a year to establish a solid base for universal child care. Last month, the Republican governor vetoed the funding provision, but a bipartisan legislative majority, prodded by public demand, has now voted to override the veto. Also, the red state legislature in Tennessee is providing a new and essential child care benefit to low-income parents of infants and toddlers, diapers, And even some in the U.S. Congress are beginning to get the child care message, having formed the first ever Congressional Dads Caucus to push family-friendly policies. This is Jim Hightower saying, when leaders won't lead, the people must shove them out of the way.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Make sure you grab the podcast. Or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. One of the things I love about visiting picket lines and talking to striking workers, not just their stories and the reason they got there, but all of the other people who come and march with them. The solidarity of the line. The idea of coming just to show support. And here in Erie, people from all over the place. I know the Teamsters sent their horsemen, their motorcycle club to come through. I know the IBEWs had a bunch of people here. And today, some UAW folks have shown up from as far away as Lordstown, Ohio, to show support for the workers here. That's why I've asked Josh Ayers to come sit down with us. Josh is the bargaining committee chairman for UAW 1112 in Lordstown, Ohio. He has brought a bunch of folks here to come show the web tech striking workers a little bit of support. Josh, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you very much, Rick.
So, I guess first question, you know, what made you make this journey?
Well, we heard the UE was on strike up here with the company, and we're like, well, we have the time to come up here and show some support, back them. At Altium Cells, you know, we're in a contract dispute with them, trying to form our first contract with the company, and it's been a rough couple months since we initiated the bargaining process on February 14th of 2023.
So, you know, the idea of solidarity, something core to what brought you here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, UE, UAW, USW, we're all in this together. We're all brothers and sisters.
Yeah, that old Knights of Labor frame, an injury to one, an injury to all. I like that. You know, what's been your experience here?
I mean, it looks like it's you know, members are showing up, standing out, you know, solidarity, togetherness. You know, it's hot as hell outside, but everyone's staying hydrated and battling the heat. So, yeah, I mean, myself and the committee that came up, we were proud to participate. And, heck, I like to be out on the line still, actually.
No, I'm with you, and I'm looking forward to going back. But you guys, you work for this Altium Cell. You guys, like you just said, you're beginning this process.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. What's going on?
Okay, so Lordstown Assembly Plant, which was a GM assembly plant, they shut the doors in 2019, and it was.
I remember. It was heartbreaking.
It was devastating to the Mahoning Valley, Trumbull County. Columbiana, Tri-County area, people either had a couple choices. They could transfer to another plant, or they could voluntarily quit, or they could take a buyout. It displaced a lot of families. It caused a lot of heartbreak. I remember seeing videos of people standing outside the plant, crying, just sobbing. It was heartbreaking.
No, I remember that. Look, grew up in Cleveland. That was a massive facility, employed thousands of people. I remember, I worked for a trucking company in Cleveland at the time. We were in and out of there all the time. It was a huge driver for the area, and to see it you know, just destroyed is frustrating, angering, all of those things. And I remember, you know, former President Trump saying, we're going to save this. Don't you worry. Don't move. Yeah. That didn't happen. And what came and replaced those jobs hasn't really helped all that much either, if I've got this right.
Right. So if I can give you a quick background. So I was employed at General Motors Lordstown Assembly Plant in 1997. I was hired full-time in 2000. I was summer help in 97, full-time in 2002. I took a relocation package to Fairfax, Kansas in 2008. I was trying to come back to Lordstown, and that's when the financial crisis happened, when the big three, you know, kind of, two out of three went bankruptcy, filed bankruptcy and restructuring. They offered me a buyout because I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to come back to Lordstown.
Right.
So I took the buyout, moved back home. And real quick, you know, a job at GM Lordstown, it was like the golden ticket, as I call it. It was like a very desirable job. You know, if you weren't a nurse, a doctor, a lawyer, that was the next gig.
Yeah.
That's where people were like breaking down doors to try to get into because of the weight. The wages were great. Healthcare was great. The you know, the profit sharing, you know, the discounts you got on General Motors vehicles. I mean, it was great living.
No, you busted your behind, but you made a good living.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, too, any safety issues inside the plant, not only did you have the company that would, you know, investigate and try to make things right, but you also had the UAW safety team. So I never went to work afraid that I was going to get injured or killed. I pretty much always felt safe walking to work. So fast forward a couple years, you know, GM closed the doors in 2019, and all of a sudden this you know, news release came out about this joint venture between General Motors and LG, forming this company called Altium Cells. I'm like, you know, I moved back into town. Like, this could be my next golden ticket.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good job.
Right.
Local, in that place that had the best wages ever.
Right.
I can see how you'd be excited about
that. Right. So got employed there, and it's not a golden ticket. I can promise you that. So wages. Let's talk about wages real quick. So if you're in shipping and receiving, global supply chain, it's $15 an hour to start. If you're an operator on the floor, it's $16.50 an hour to start. And if you're a tech lead, you get a dollar more. It's $17.50 to start. After 6 months, you get a 50-cent raise. And another 6 months after that, it's 23 cents. And every 6 months after that, it's a 23 cents raise.
Can't afford that extra 2 cents to get you to the quarter?
I guess not, you know. But after a seven-year, you know, time spent in the facility, you make just above $20 an hour. So seven-year, you know, buy-in into the company, investment in the company, and they only want to give you $20 an hour.
No, and look, I don't know how you make a living on that. I don't know how you support a family on that. If those are the jobs that are going to replace those family-sustaining jobs of the auto industry, I don't know where we are as a society.
Right. I mean, these are the jobs of the future. I'm sorry to say this, but we're in trouble.
Yeah.
If this is the rate it's going at.
No, because, you know, you're right. We're told these are the next generation of jobs. This is the future, which is why I guess you're organizing, right? Which is why you're pursuing this. Because, you know, I've said before, you know, those UAW jobs, those assembly line jobs, those weren't great jobs. Those steel mill jobs, those weren't great jobs. That truck driving job that I've had for over 30 years wasn't a great job until they were union jobs.
Correct.
Until people fought to make them better, until people pursued contracts and went on strike like they're doing here in Erie. That's how we built the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. That is the only way. There's no benevolent corporation going to say, here, we're going to bestow these wonderful things upon you. It's people like you demanding we earn a better living. We demand it.
Correct. So I was hired in on March 7th of 2022. And within my first couple of weeks of orientation class, I was already reaching out to the UAW along with some of my other new hire coworkers. And we're like, how soon can we organize? So the organizing process actually kicked off in June of 2022. And let's see, we tried to do a car check. Of course, the company pushed back on the car check and said, you know, you're going to have to go through the NLRB. So in December of 2022, on December 7th and 8th, we had a vote inside the plant. And it was the total ass-kicking of the yes-no vote. 7-10 yes, 16 no's.
That is outstanding.
I was able to sit in on the votes, and they start counting votes around 11 o'clock at night on the 8th. And, I mean, I still get chills thinking about it because it was amazing just to hear every vote being counted one at a time. Yes, 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 yes. And I'll never forget that night. It was amazing because all the hard work with, you know, trying to organize, you know, they're called VOCs, Volunteer Organizing Committee. We're inside the plant every day talking to people, educating about why union is important, why we need it. Do you think this company is going to give us fair, livable wages and great health care? And We had massive amounts of health and safety issues inside the plant. We had an explosion. We had a death inside the plant. It wasn't one of our members. It was one of the OEMs from Korea that passed away. He was unfortunately crushed due to a safety lockout violation. He later died about 3 months later after he got crushed in the hospital. You got people getting chemical burns. I mean, there's so many hazardous chemicals inside this facility. It's not like an assembly line where, you know, you might have a few hazardous chemicals, you know, like urethane or in the paint shop or whatnot. But, I mean, these things are highly caustic, cancerous. Some cause reproductive issues, cancer. And the problem is that OSHA is behind the eight ball because, like, these chemicals are kind of new to the United States.
And proprietary.
Yes, and proprietary, absolutely. So you got electrolyte. We have issues where people just inhale the fumes and they start getting dizzy, vomiting, passing out. It causes severe irritation, burns on the skin. You have to get a special train called Calginate. And basically, I wash your body part, the skin, for like 15 minutes and then put this Calginate on there because the electrolyte actually seeks calcium in the bone.
Yes. That sounds like a job I don't want to do.
For $16.50 an hour.
Yeah, that sounds like a job I would never do for $16.50 an hour. And this is why I think it's important for folks like you who are doing it. And good on you for doing it, because it is helping move us in a better direction. The new green economy is coming, but it should come with better wages, hours, and conditions. Sure. It should come with better opportunities. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Josh Ayers. Josh is bargaining committee chairman for the UAW 1112 local in Lordstown, Ohio. He's here in Erie to help support the web tech workers who are on strike. I want to go back to this where you are right now, though, because you won the election.
Yes.
In the old days, you sit down, you bargain a contract. It gets done. And if it doesn't get done, you go on strike. Where are you guys now?
Well, we started bargaining February 14th of 2023. And we told the company up front that, hey, if you want to start discussing wages, we're open to it. They heard us, but they didn't do anything about it. Bargaining has been kind of held up, and I'm going to tell you why, because of all the health and safety issues inside the plant. So we actually had to pause bargaining to deal with the health and safety issues inside the plant, And, one of them was the explosion that happened in the notch and dry portion of the plant. In fact, now the joke is it's called notch and die.
That's not a joke.
Well, yeah.
There's nothing funny about that.
No, it's not.
But I know it's gallows humor.
Yes.
I get that, because you're working in dangerous conditions, but nobody should have to do that.
No. And actually, after that happened, there was such fear in the employees working there. I mean, it was every day was a question, like, am I safe? I mean, do I even want to work here anymore? They were kind of waiting to see why the explosion happened. And then when the company came out to say why the explosion happened, they didn't trust the company. They still don't trust the company. No matter what they say, they don't trust the company.
And this is, again, another one of those reasons why every working person should have a union and someone standing behind them. Now, here's the weird part for me, because as I've said before on this program, we've got the most pro-union president in the history of, or at least in my lifetime. We've got a National Labor Relations Board with someone who I think is a rock star and doing fantastic work. How does this help get you to the next step? Is it that our laws are so badly broken that they're going to be able to drag this out? How do you see it playing?
So unfortunately, when the IRA was developed and passed, there is no written laws in there to tell where the money's supposed to go. So that's the problem. These companies, be it LG, Samsung, SK, They're reaping the benefits of the taxpayer dollars, and of course the workers aren't seeing a dime of it.
Yeah. How profitable is Altum Cell?
Hard to say. I think they came out with something about a month or so ago and said last year they was it $6.5 billion?
Billion? And well, let me Let me stutter and stammer a little bit over the fact that they made $6.5 billion and they're paying you $16.50 to work in dangerous conditions. Let me chew on that for a second, because that sounds wrong.
I don't know. Like I said, I mean, I could be off of my numbers.
No, I mean, but they're a wild. But we see this across the board. I mean, I look at UPS right now. They made $13.9 billion, and they don't want to give a raise to people who made them that money. So the question I come back to is, you know, how do we push this forward? How do we get them to do what they got to do?
So on May of this year, the committee and myself, we did go to Washington, D.C. to talk to some congressional members, some senators.
And you got a great one. Sherrod Brown is one of my favorite people. Fabulous person.
Yeah,
J.D. Vance, not so much.
Well, actually, the Senate was out on vacation for the holiday. And we did talk to their staffers. In fact, J.D. Vance's office, you know, we did visit. And they're well aware of it. And it was surprising, but they sounded like they kind of wanted to get involved and help. We met with Sherrod Brown's staff as well. So I was able to testify in front of some of the congressional members. And I just gave a brief, brief explanation of, like, my history at Lordstown, like you and I just discussed, transitioning it over to Altium Cells. And I just told them it's a race to the bottom, not the top. Again, sure. As I told you, you know, if these are the jobs of the future, we're in trouble. And not only that, with the taxpayer dollars, Altium's getting $1.2 billion a year in taxpayer funding. So, here's the problem. So, before the IRA even came in existence, GM and LG got together and said, let's create this company. You don't create a company if you're not going to make money, correct?
Absolutely.
So, you got two multi-billion dollar companies forming a joint venture. Now, a couple years later, now they're getting taxpayer dollars on top of that, and yet the workers haven't seen one dime.
So it tells me there's money to be had, and which is why you organize. And the hope is you fight for this and you win. But Josh, I appreciate you sharing some time with us,
sure,
sharing some thoughts. I wish you the best in this. Anything we can do here to help, let me know. One day stronger, one day longer, my brother.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? Do you see all of this money that's going into the future, not trickling down to the people who are actually making the money or the ones who are actually doing the work? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So as we've been talking about here, grad students organizing across the country. UE, the folks here, they've organized, 14,000 grad workers since January? I mean, that's doing the work, got to tell you. And I'm sitting here with one of them. Andrew Enum is a grad worker from Johns Hopkins University, here to support the striking workers at Web Tech. Andrew, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you here? Why'd you come from Johns Hopkins all the way up to Erie here? What brought you into town?
When we found out Local 506 and 618 were going on strike, we knew we had to be a part of it. We've just joined this union. We're the new kids on the block, and it's time for us to really show why we joined, show us that our values really are in line. That's why we joined UE. That's why they wanted to work with us, and come up here and show solidarity with the union we're now a part of building. You know, we're also here just to learn from this historic local that has so much to offer us and see what we're able to offer them and really take all those lessons back, because we're interested in building the type of militant union that they have here, back in Baltimore, back in Chicago, up in Boston, at MIT, you know, all of the different grad workers that are coming in. This is the kind of union we want to be a part of and want to build and grow to what it used to be.
Yeah, so do you have a union background? I mean, is this your first foray into it? Where are you at on that scale?
Yeah, so I didn't really know what unions were until I was, like, almost graduating college. And even even then, I didn't really understand that I could be in one. I thought it was just like...
Let alone leading one.
Yeah, let alone being a union organizer, which I would become in grad school. So yeah, the first time I actually started doing union organizing was as a grad student. I sort of knew what they were before that. Didn't understand that like I was able to be in one as a grad student. I thought only some workplaces could have unions. I had no idea that there was a time when you just... We're in a union. That's a standard, and it should be.
And so, across industries. I mean, you go back into the 50s and 60s, there were unions for everything. Every type of worker had a voice and had contracts. It was different.
Yeah, it was definitely different. And I think I was sort of victim to the, you know, decline of the labor movement, and I just didn't even understand it. When I got to grad school, some of the more senior grad students were telling me, like, this is the project we're doing. We're trying to have a union, and sort of explained to me what it was. And, you know, it took me some time to actually learn. I went to reading some labor history and going to some forums to sort of understand it a little bit better. But, yeah, prior to becoming a union organizer, I had no background. My parents weren't in unions. My grandparents weren't in unions. They didn't even really know what it was. And so this sort of came solely off of, you
know, so what do they think about this?
They're supportive. They've actually, a little bit before we started our union card drive, my dad was visiting me in Baltimore and actually took him to a union meeting with me. And, you know, he leans over to me while we're talking about, you know, why we're fighting for a union. And he's like, hey, that sounds pretty good. Like, I kind of like your platform up there. And I was like, yeah, I feel like everyone should have this. And he was like, oh, yeah. And so.
So it's not only just educating students, educating their parents.
Yeah, it's a real opportunity to really get that message out there. But he really liked it. I've told him, like, you could also have a union. He works in tech. And so, you know, they tend to think they don't need them. But
no, they really need them.
They really need them, especially as the tech evolves. And so, yeah. And my
mom, everyone's replaced by AI.
Yeah, exactly. And my mom, on the other hand, is also working in tech now. And so the company she's working with also has sort of a up-and-coming union drive. And I'm just like, so when someone comes to you and talks to you about being involved in the union, you should sign up. Sign up immediately. So, yeah, it's been good. My parents are on board.
Yeah, I love these stories because, you know, you get this sense of empowerment. I can feel it from you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm more confident in this than a lot of things that I've been a part of. Just knowing that, like, I'm fully bought in. This is the route to really rebuilding the kind of working conditions that people need, and really healing the divisions in the country. It's really going to be through the union movement and rebuilding it to what it once was and surpassing that.
You're right. So is this your first picket line? I mean, I know you're out walking the picket line today. Is that first experience there, or have you been on other lines before?
Yeah, so I was actually on the Temple grad student picket line in Philly back a couple months ago. So that was actually my first. It was actually the day I was going up to Princeton, also a UE affiliated local that had their card drive rally. And I was on my way up to Jersey and I was passing through Philly. So I stopped at the picket line and stayed there for about an hour and then picked someone up who was flying there to then go to Princeton for their own rally. So I've been all over. I've been traveling this whole region, really.
Well, that's incredible. No, it really is. And especially, you know, at someone your age, I mean, most young people, they're not into this. And this is why in this generation, I've got such great hope for your generation. I do. Because you seem to be getting it. And it's one of these things where I think, and maybe I'm wrong, but you look at maybe what happened to your parents. You look at what's been going on. You say, I'm not putting up with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the change that I want.
Yeah. I mean, I think for a lot of people in my generation, and I'm sort of, my younger brothers may not fully remember this, but, you know, we saw the collapse of 08 and what it did to our families and to our parents. And it's just not something we're interested in repeating. And it's interesting, as I've been organizing, you know, I'm entering my fifth year at Hopkins. And every year as I talk to the incoming grad workers, it's becoming easier and easier to have this, like, union conversation with them. I'll bring it up, and initially they're sort of a little cagey about it. They don't know much about it. They're a little afraid. Now they come and ask me, hey, I heard you're the union guy. Let's what's that about? I want to know. So I'm hoping that's going to continue that trend this year. But it's seeming that people are just getting it. They don't need to be convinced that they deserve to have a voice, because, I mean, we're not listened to. That applies sort of in a lot of ways. Young people are really getting active now, and not a lot's changing in the direction that it needs to go. And so I think it's time that young folk are really interested in taking back that power.
So what's your PhD in? And where are you planning career path?
Yeah, so I am getting a PhD in biophysics and biophysical chemistry.
Yeah, nothing I know anything about.
So
I'm not even going to pretend.
Yeah. So I'm in the School of Medicine. There's some potential medical applications, but, you know, I'm in a lab every day doing research that goes into grants to get more funding, could eventually lead to drug discovery, things like that. I think career path-wise, I'm actually thinking of shifting away from doing research. I'm looking into science policy, starting to shift the way in which we do science policy. Something that I'm passionate about is sort of taking the greed aspect out of it. A lot of what gets discovered at universities then goes to these big companies that then extort money from people to survive. And I'm interested in starting to shift that, where, you know, if you're taking public money, you shouldn't be able to make endless amounts of profit on producing a discovery that came from a government-funded lab. That's the kind of thing that I'm interested in starting to shift into, using the scientific, you know, expertise I'm going to have. This doesn't make sense. This isn't how science should be done. It shouldn't be driven by how you make the most money. It should be driven by what makes sense to get to the next step.
Love you, man. No, I mean, look, that's music to my ears, that the future can be bright. And that is a good thing. Last question I've got for you. For the folks here walking the picket line or on strike today, you got any words for them? Any encouragement? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm planning to go back out there now, and I'll tell them some of this myself. But, yeah, I mean,